Hello and welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, PrecisionHydration.com.
Precision Hydration offer electrolyte drinks in different strengths to match how you sweat. Personalise your hydration strategy today at PrecisionHydration.com and get a free box or tube of pH worth up to $9.99 using the code OXYGENADDICT.
We're also brought to you by FueledByCake.com.
That'll be my charity recipe book, raising £15,000 for three amazing charities. Please go and buy one, FueledByCake.com.
And we're also brought to you by TeamOxygenAddict.com Triathlon Coaching.
The official coaching partner to the Outlaw Series, training plans, coaching support from Rob Wilby, monthly video coaching calls, and a private Facebook group for you and your teammates.
And also remember, you can join our free Oxygen Addict Triathlon Community Facebook page where there's loads of good triathlon chat, advice, all kinds of excitement going on there. We're over 1,100 members now, nearly 1,200 members, I think. So get yourself in there, get amongst the chat, and yes, we will see you in there shortly. And welcome to the show. It's December, hells, it's nearly Christmas. I've got my little light up Christmas Santa on the window there. The lights are hanging up outside on the hedge. The bike is on the turbo trainer looking at me menacingly. It's December. It's December all round. How are you, my friend?
Yeah, good. We have our tree up. In fact, I put it up last week. It's a little bit keen, isn't it?
No, it's good. I think as soon as December's around, get in there, get the lights up, fill yourself with festive cheer. Why not?
Get it on. The our street, there are a few houses on our street which go a little bit crazy. And there's one house that I think bit by bit add their lights, and they've now got a Father Christmas sort of hanging out the window. And then there's another house, which is just amazing. In years gone by, Rob, they had Olaf hanging out their caravan at the top of the caravan on the drive. Olaf has returned, but is not out hanging out of a he's not hanging out of a caravan, but it's just like, oh yes, get in, Olaf out, yep, Christmas is around the corner.
I love it. I love going for a run in the dark this time of year and spotting as the houses gradually get lit up. I love that Brits are making more of an Americanized effort to dress the houses up these days. I love it. I'm a right little kid at heart, me. So get out there and get running and see if you can go Santa spotting, or in your case, Hells, Olaf spotting.
Yeah, it's just great. It puts a smile on my face.
Right. So today's show, we've got some race results coming up for you from 70.3 Middle East Championships. We've also got results from 70.3 Taupo down in New Zealand. And hopefully, we're recording a bit earlier than usual today. The race is still going on in Indian Wells as we speak. And the leading men are a few minutes away from finishing. So we'll hopefully have certainly the first couple across the line from there. And then later on, I've got a cracking interview with Ian Hamilton, who a lot of the British listeners will already know. He's the guy who's the race director of the Outlaw Race Series, amongst many other different events over in the UK. So I thought it'd be great to get him on and get his take on. He's seen so many people transform their lives by doing sort of half distance and full distance races across a 25 plus year career in triathlon. So great interview with him, really interested in listening to. And that's what it really comes down to me, Hells, is not so much about how fast people swim, bike or run splits are, but the transformation and change people make in their lives when they can use endurance sport to make a big change across everything, not just like running around in circles.
And so I think probably everyone, if you're listening to this right now and you're into triathlon, I imagine in some way that your life has changed through it as well.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Mine has, for sure.
Yeah. And it's like we said, isn't it? It's less about it, or it becomes less and less across time about the time splits you see on the clock when you finish, and more about the habit of doing something really productive with your days as well as your work and family life. So, yeah, yes. It's a dead interesting interview from that point of view, actually. Someone who's built his life around, he says at one point something like, because he got into race directing really early in his life, he's never had to have a shirt and tie job. So I love anyone who's managed to carve out their own niche in life. So it's a dead interesting interview.
Oh, that is great. That is great. Oh my God, Rob, we could talk all about that. Maybe we will have to save that for another podcast.
Yes. I think so. We'll go on for too long, won't we?
Yes.
All right, listen, let's kick this off with the results section then, sponsored by Precision Hydration. Now, guys, remember, you can use the code OXYGENADDICT to get yourself $9.99's worth of free Precision Hydration products off their website. And what you can also do is get on there and take the online sweat test to see if that points towards you being a particularly heavy or particularly salty sweater. And what you'll typically see is if you really struggle with cramp when you're either swimming, biking or running, or if you've really struggled in your races when it's been really hot and you've ended up either not performing as well as you think you should have done, or in the worst cases, feeling really, really sick and ill, like I used to do quite a lot in races, especially in the heat. That's a real pointer that just by taking care of your electrolyte needs, it's a very small thing that makes a very, very big difference. So if you go over to precisionhydration.com, there's loads of great information on their blog all about hydration, which we talked about this over the years, haven't we, Els? How little people sort of know about it until we point them towards these blogs and people start reading and educating themselves. It can make such a massive difference on the performance, even on a day-to-day basis in training. If your feet are not cramping up in the pool, that's worth more than a few minutes off a race time, I think, arguably.
Oh, totally, totally. And Rob, you know how in the past I've definitely worn my bubble hat a lot that they sent to me last winter.
You do love
when
your Precision Hydration bubble hat, don't you?
Yeah, wore it all the time. Anyway, if you want a bubble hat, the Boco gear, they're really, really well made. They are selling them. So you just have to look on their social media and you'll see they've put links up and stuff like that. But they're really cool. They're nice and colourful and with a purple bubble.
You can get your own purple bubble. Get in there and check it out, guys. All right. So kicking off the results today, I think we've got to start with the Middle East 70.3 Championships in Bahrain, because as well as being, you know, a big race where there's lots of people racing at the end of the season, it was just a scorching fast day. So that combination of people pushing each other hard and the conditions, by all accounts, being almost perfect for racing, resulted in just some quite stunning times on both the men's and the women's side, didn't they?
Yeah. Oh, I think we have to start with the, I mean, both sides have brilliant stories, but we'll come on to Holly Lawrence shortly. But on the men's side, I think it's the fact that it was a 1-2-3 for Norway, and it was the same 1-2-3 that we saw at WTS Bermuda earlier on in the year, when I think a lot of people were like, what the hell? What? Who are these like three Norwegians? Obviously, we had heard of Christian Blumenfelt. We've had Christian on the podcast, but Gustav Eden and Kasper Storms did a 1-2-3, and these guys train together all the time. They're in like a very, very close-knit group. Lisa Norden sometimes trains with them, and literally they would push each other on. And when we heard from Christian, you could hear just how hard they are training. Added into the fact that they're all still pretty young, aren't
they? How old are they? Do you remember? The top of your head?
Like early 20s.
Early 20s, so aren't they? Again, it's this like new guard of athlete who are still racing, obviously racing really, really well at ITU level because they're winning and podium and stuff. But then that transition happens to 70.3 racing and they bring that blazing speed with them and just destroy fields.
Yeah, it is. Honestly, it's mighty. It's mighty. Absolutely. They blasted it in the race, didn't they, at the weekend? Incredible.
The thing I love the most about this is that Christian Blumenfelt was on your radar before probably anybody's, because he was always your favourite with the gutsy way that he used to race, wasn't he? And
yeah.
I think even before he was winning stuff, you were talking about how he would battle all the way to the line for whatever place he was racing for. So yeah, that fighting spirit has seen him through. And in this case, now his fitness has come on by a couple of years. It's going to take some special performance to beat the time he's posted at Bahrain, I'll tell you what.
Oh, massively. So he's 24, Rob. Casper's 21. And then 22. So yeah, wow. early 20s.
So we'll start with the headline figure here. So Christian Blumenfelt breaks the official Ironman 70.3 world best time by 5 minutes. 5 minutes off it. And added to that, he was 11 clear minutes faster than he was over the same course the year before. So an 11-minute improvement, which, like, by in itself is absolutely staggering, isn't it? I know he's only a young guy, but he's already incredibly fit. So yeah, to be able to take 11 minutes off a time like that is boggling.
Yes.
So first person ever under 3 hours 30 with a 3 hour 29.04. Splits line up like this, hold on to your hat with this one.
Yeah.
So kick off with a 23:20 swim, 1:56 on the bike. Thank you very much. And closes with 1:06:58 run, which I believe is the second fastest ever 70.3 run behind Jan Frodeno's performance. Yeah.
And Gustav Iden did a 1:07 run.
Yeah, he was only, 15 seconds behind?
Yeah. Oh, wow. So the three of them rode legally together on the bike because they all did 1:56 bike splits.
Yeah.
And pretty much, they were pretty much out of the water together. I mean, Christian would have come out, 20 seconds ahead of the other two guys who were swimming together.
Yeah. And it looks like it came down to a run battle between Christian and Gustav Iden. And I think he took the lead about the halfway point, but there was only, let's do the math, 20 seconds between them at the finish line still. So he must have pushed him all the way to the line, mustn't he? That's only 100 yards at their kind of speed.
Yeah, honestly, absolutely. And we should say Adam Bowden led out the swim, Rob, with a 23:09. So he would have been doing the work in that swim.
Well, he's been right up there with the three of them the whole way through, and it's worth pointing out, I mean, in inverted commas, you only finished fourth, but it's less than a minute outside the old world record.
Yeah.
So massive shout out to Adam as well. That's a stellar performance, isn't it?
Yeah, and he finished it with a 1:11 run.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Swift, hey?
Yeah, you said it. Breaks your heart to ride 1:58 and get dropped, though, doesn't it? For 90. And it was legit as well. I've already seen some grumblings on social media and on forums. In fact, by some very big name pro tour athletes, basically saying how legit are the distances of these courses. I coach a guy who raced at this one, and his bike split came in, I think, 89 and a bit kilometers. So
yeah, I think that's
totally
what,
legit.
I think that's what their coaches said, that it was just like literally point something of a K off or whatever.
And exactly the same with the run as well. So the distances, certainly, I know I'm only talking N equals one numbers here, but my guy's Garmin showed the distances to be, you know, spot on. I'm going to give him a shout out, actually. Chris Morgan managed to get himself a slot for the Ironman 70.3 Worlds there with a blistering 2:18 on the bike, going like 12 clear minutes faster than he thought he was going to, which when an athlete has a breakthrough like that, you've just got to go get him on the podcast.
Oh my God, that's mental. Rob, their coach, Ariel Dvaitan, said that according to the Power GPS file, the bike was 89.3K, the run was spot on. All Norwegians have uploaded the files of the race at Strava, so you can check them out. Unfortunately, Christian and Gustav had some trouble with the power meter, so power data is not accurate.
Interesting.
That's their coach.
Yeah.
So there you go. It's from the coach himself.
I'd imagine he's having a pretty good day right now.
Oh, I think so. Another person that we should give a shout out to, Rob, is Steve Leonard, who was racing, and he got in touch with us. He said he went under 4:30 for the first time. He said he nabbed the final slots in the male 30 to 34 age group, so that was the ninth. And then he said, I also got to spend most of the award ceremony chatting with Christian as I randomly sat down at their table without realising it. Such a nice guy. Sounds a bit like Kimberly Morrison sitting down next to Patrick Langer, not really realising it.
That's brilliant, isn't it? Triathlon's like that, though, isn't it? Because you see pictures of people on a bike and their face is completely covered by a helmet.
Yeah.
Most triathletes you couldn't pick out of a crowd, I think, apart from the guys who you see on magazine covers. So that's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, it's always like when you go to your club Christmas do and you're like, who's that? Oh, that's the person who I like ride or swim with every time. They look a little bit different when they're not in Lycra. Rob, we should.
That's the problem being a coach, isn't it? Because people come up to you and chat to you in the street and you just go, I've got no idea who you are. Oh, I've coached you at swimming 3 times a week for 2 years without your hat and goggles on and with clothes.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yes, it's very weird. Suddenly when you see someone with, Rob. The women's race was as impressive. Holly Lawrence was making her comeback from injury and managed to defend, managed to win again out there, 70.3. And she says, I couldn't be happier to start my comeback with a big fat win here. So it was really good race from her. Second was Sarah Lewis, fellow sort of like Aussie British, but we're going to go British there, if that's all right, who really, really wasn't that far behind, what, like 45 seconds. And then Ellie Salthouse was third in 4:06. But Precision Hydration, Sarah is one of their athletes, so I think they were pretty happy with her as well. But fantastic to see Holly Lawrence back, back in action. So the first time since breaking her foot in April.
I'm going to give a little shout out. I did a bit of reading around here, Hells, and there was a British lady called Frankie Sanjana in fourth, in 4:11, who I'd never really come across on my radar before, and I googled her name. I've not really.
Frankie's done loads.
Well, I went back through her blog, and there's a real lesson here for people in, like, you never know what's possible until you apply yourself, right? She kicks off in 2012, going 5:44 at Ironman Galway, and then has gone 4:11 at this race. So it really goes to show that you apply yourself for 5-6 years. You really don't know what's possible, do you?
No. Frankie's been, she's been racing pro for a couple of seasons now, and I think did she used to do rowing? Have I made that up?
I'm not sure. She's not updated this blog since 2015. I think she was injured then, and it says in 2015, I did some races after having some hip operations and didn't disgrace myself. So I couldn't find out much about her last couple of years. Yeah. But I was dead impressed to come from, like, you know, 5:44. And then the next season,
to make those massive improvements.
Exactly. Yeah. Really, really cool.
Frankie, well done.
Yeah. Good. All right, so next race up, we're going to go all the way down to New Zealand for Taupo 70.3, which is smack in the middle of their beautiful summer season down there, isn't it?
I know, and I think Laura Siddle, friend of the show, was on mic duty. She was doing a bit of commentary down there.
Good knowledge. I like it.
I saw her greeting the kids a lot as they crossed the line in the kids' races and things as well. So, yeah. Well done. So Mike Phillips, Rob, won the men's race in 3:52 ahead of Casey Munro and Tim Reed.
And on the ladies' side, it was Radka Vodichkova in 4:20 from Jocelyn McCauley and Rebecca Clark in third.
We mentioned Radka like last week, didn't we? She's having an amazing season.
She's just on fire, isn't she?
Yeah.
Her back-to-back wins. Where was it she raced? Was it? It wasn't Ironman Western Australia, was it, that she won?
No, I want to say Western Sydney.
Ah, yeah, 2 weeks Isn't ago, it? I yep. think. Who knows? We probably should.
I don't know. We've definitely mentioned it in the last couple of weeks.
All right, so it's that time. We get to see whether the results are in. We've never done this before, Hills. That's
they
great,
are.
Isn't it?
They are, Rob. I've got it. I've got the tracker on my phone.
Live results are in from 70.3 Indian Wells. And I think this race is on a lot of people's radars because Lionel Sanders is obviously lots and lots of fans around the world because of the amount of stuff he does with social media and talking to camera, and very interesting following his story on the back of him not exactly having the race that he hoped for in Kona. So it's great to see him come back and have a real good race to end the season there, isn't it? So he takes the win in 3:45 from Joe Gambles in 3:48 and Kenneth Peterson, who I believe had a storming bike leg, the fastest bike leg, finishes in 3:50.
Yeah, he did a 2:04 bike leg, according to the tracker.
And as we speak, we'll kind of give a live up rate here, can't we? We've got Chelsea Sodaro in the lead. She's got 3 minutes over Hayley Chora and another minute over Carrie Lester at the 10-mile point. So there you go.
Still a little bit to go. Still the other race that's going on as we talk is Patagon Man, the Extreme Triathlon. We know that Lucy Gossage is racing, Louise Minchin's racing. They both came out of the water pretty much together in an hour. That is a smashing swim from Louise Minchin.
It is, isn't it? Came out on Lucy Gossage's feet, did she?
I don't know. It might have been the other way around.
It might well have been. Yeah, she's a good swimmer, isn't she?
She's a very, very fine swimmer. So, yeah, we...
I wonder how cold it was.
I don't know. I was hearing sort of 12 degrees. I don't know.
I don't insanely think it was cold.
Yeah, but I don't think it was as cold as maybe they had been thinking it might have been. I might be wrong, but I think there was talk of sort of 7 degrees. So
it's, I tell you what, it's tough swimming for an hour in water that cold, isn't it? If it genuinely is 12 degrees, that's, Yeah, that's pretty chilly.
But honestly, the
Hats off to them.
photos
Or double
from
hats on,
Chile,
more to the point.
yeah, hats on. The photos from Chile look just, oh, it makes you want to go there. It really does. Sort of snow-capped peaks, very, very, mountainous. These incredible fjords, like blue skies, green. It
Looks beautiful,
just
doesn't it?
looks awesome. And we said earlier that we might hear from Louise. We might not. They obviously haven't finished yet. I don't know. We might hear from her later in the show, but we might not.
I like this exciting kind of done on the fly live thing. Listeners, you're going to have to keep on listening to the end of the show to see if we manage to get some audio through overnight. And if so, listen out later on. And if
Yes.
not, listen out next week.
Hopefully.
Oh, brilliant. Right. So this week's interview, as I've already trailed, is friend of the show and Outlaw Series race director and longtime race director in this country, Ian Hamilton. He's been racing since way back in the day in the 80s and put together his first events as a college university project back when and hasn't stopped since. And I think it's fair to say, if there's anybody who's racing in the UK who hasn't done at least one of the events that Ian's been involved in, I'll be pretty amazed. So, yeah. So let's have a listen into the interview with him about how he's seen triathlon change people's lives over the years. Ian Hamilton, welcome to the show. It's great to get you on. First, we'll kick off with how you doing. How are you today?
Good, yeah, good actually. We have a work turbo at lunchtime, so fresh off the turbo, and yeah, pretty good.
Good man. Getting it done at lunchtime, that's what I like to hear. And for people who are not watching on video, we've got a cracking, like there's a display frame behind you on the office wall there with, is it all of the Outlaw medals you've got pinned on the wall there? That's brilliant.
Yeah, in actual fact, we've not quite. One second. No, the Outlaw full from 2018 is not on there yet. But gradually, yeah, we're filling up a relatively big frame, which Frame Supply 2 has actually just put all the medals up there. So you've got at the moment there's 9 years worth of medals.
Nice. Oh, well, that's a perfect introduction into really talking about how, I mean, I'm sure you're like me, you click your fingers and a decade goes by. And I still remember 10 years ago seeing, there's going to be a new iron distance race in the UK. It's going to be based at Home Pier Point and it's going to be a really big sort of branded event, which we were all really excited about. So talk us through the evolution about what it was that inspired you to put together a sort of alternative brand iron distance event.
I guess at the time when we sort of came up with the theory, there was quite a big call, and no disrespect, but 10 years ago, Ironman UK ultimately wasn't doing quite as well, and there was no other iron distance events out there, and so we toyed with the idea, and then ultimately we got together. We came up with five or six different points of that we needed to, we wanted to say you are something as you cross the finish line. We needed a brand that you could tattoo, and we wanted to make it because my experience of sort of like racing Ironman was I'd go away ultimately to different countries, take the family with me, and make doing an Ironman a holiday. And so we wanted to sort of like create that same vibe. So it's not only about the athlete, it was also about the spectators, the supporters, to have a good time. So that's very simply, that's how it started.
And it did seem like for a while there, back in, for people who are relatively new to the sport, I'm old enough to remember there was a couple of sort of small club run iron distance events going on that kind of faded out of the scene around, must have been around 2006, I think. Do you remember the longest day? That was one that was run by Black Country Triathletes, wasn't it? And I think 2006 was the last year, and they pulled the plug on that when they were kind of struggling to get 100 entries for it at a time when Ironman UK had kicked off down there. So I'd imagine it must have been it's a pretty ballsy thing to do to launch another big co-branded iron distance event at a time when it looked as though certainly all the people were headed towards, the M dot brand. Did it feel that way at the time?
Maybe 10 years ago was slightly more naive. Yeah, it was. It was one of those things. We've been working down at the Home Pier Pont for, well, it's sort of 15 years, and so we knew the venue, there was a couple of things that we'd worked really hard, which was ultimately getting some road closures. That took us quite a long time. And when we first started the journey, so to speak, we were probably slightly more concerned about whether it would work or not. By the time we actually launched the event, we'd spent that long actually putting the event together and organising the routes and getting the permissions and doing all that sort of thing. Actually putting bums on seats, so to speak, wasn't the biggest thing for us. It was actually just getting that event launched. And I remember, it was quite strange. We ended up launching it slightly earlier than we expected to for one reason or another. And I was actually, this sounds slightly corny, but I was actually sat on a beach somewhere out of the UK and had a little app, or maybe in those days I was following it on my laptop. But we launched the entries, it opened, and in the first day I think we got something like 600 entries. And at that point we knew we had something that would work. Basically, we knew what our break even was, and within the first day we'd actually managed to reach it. So the big thing was for us to get the event launched. Then it was a case of, you know, was it going to be financially viable? Those days was very different. There was like three people in the business. We were still working out of a little office at home and that type of thing. So nowadays we've got boardrooms and we've got warehouses and a fleet of vehicles and sort of like eight or nine people that sit in an office. Those days it was very different.
Well, talk us through then, let's go back even further then. How did you end up in the event management business in the first place? Because I was listening to another podcast the other day where I think they were interviewing Dean from Hoob, and he name dropped having raced you back in the day was what he said. So what was your journey and progression into triathlon like then? How did it all start?
Back in the day, good old Dean. back in the day for me was 1985. That's when I first did my first triathlon. And ultimately, I was a failed swimmer, a failed runner, and I lived in Nottingham. So without giving too many clues away, a lot of people in Nottingham used to ride a rally bike for one reason and another.
Yeah.
So that's how I got into triathlon in 1985. I didn't fail so much in triathlon. I was lucky, so to speak. And by, I think, 1920, I turned pro and raced for a few years, sort of like living UK, France, New Zealand in the winter. And so ultimately that's how I got into it. And then I realised that I probably wasn't going to earn a living out of being a full-time athlete. And so I ended up just creating races. There weren't any at that time. And as part of my business studies project that I was doing for a college, I had to create an event. And that's how it was called at the time. One Step Beyond was actually started. And, you know, it's just really progressed from that. So I've never had the fortune, or say misfortune, of actually having any other jobs in my life. And I don't really see it is a proper job. Clearly it's a proper job nowadays. But I've never gone to work at 9 and come home at 5, and I've never had to put a shirt and tie on ever. I don't think I've ever gone to work wearing a shirt and tie.
Are my hero. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But yeah, so that's how I got. That's how I sort of like got to it. And as ultimately for 10 years, it was just about paying a mortgage, just about putting food on the table and that type of thing. Then all of a sudden, more children, or you know, you get married, you have kids, and then you, as we know, when you do something you enjoy, it's actually got to change from enjoyment to actually becoming commercial. And that's within reason, a year or two before we started Outlaw.
Okay. So that was really the tipping point, was it, for you, where you thought, right, okay, come on, there's a real opportunity here? Because I don't think there's many people had the foresight to see how big triathlon was actually going to get, certainly not in this country. But when you look back to even 2005, when they had that first branded Ironman UK here, they were struggling to sell it out relative to what the numbers were doing in other countries. And it almost felt a bit like, well, maybe the UK market isn't big enough to do this kind of thing in. And then all of a sudden, you know, the last 3, 4, 5 years, it seems to have just gone exponential every year since then.
There was, at the time, when we were sort of like starting off, so to speak, I was going to say friends. I knew John Lund, and obviously he had Human Race, and he was organising lots of events, and was doing a pretty good job, in fairness to him, and he was making a decent living.
Yeah.
And I guess that was what sort of I saw, but the difference was he was obviously based in ultimately the South, and most of his events were down in London, and we were based in Nottingham. One thing I would say is that we started at the National Water Sports Centre, or Home Pierpont, and that was the key to the success of the business, that we had a good venue. And I sort of learned straight away that as long as you could have a good venue and a good basis, people would travel. And years, I remember first year we did the club relays, which is now sort of getting on to be 28 years old, we had 40 teams, so we had 160 people. Now, that it took a long time to actually get to where it is today, but last year we had over 2,000 people, and that's where it's been for probably 10 years or so. So it wasn't that I wasn't doing it because it was going to be commercial and it was going to, make lots of money. I was doing it because, within reason, I enjoyed it, and yeah. I never wanted to do the shirt and tie bit, and I'm nothing against shirt and ties, but it's just I did it because I love it, and actually, no different to today.
So you guys were well ahead of the curve then, because the Commonwealth and the Olympics have only just caught you up in terms of the fun of the relay stuff going on.
You can just, I'm just being joined by the wife, actually, to say hello.
Come and say hi.
Hi.
Rob, Teresa.
Hi, Rob.
Nice to meet you. We are mid-interview for the podcast, Teresa.
Yeah. So she'll keep an eye on me.
Someone's got to, right?
Yeah. So just going back to what you were saying, then, when we first sort of created Outlaw, we'd already spent a long time in Lanzarote, and you could see the growth of that sort of like long distance racing.
Yeah.
But previous to that, we'd worked with together with Mark Shaw, and we had a company called Pace Setter Events, and we'd put an event on called the Vitruvium. And pretty quickly, the middle distance market was going to be strong. But in the first year of the Vitruvium, which I think was, I'm looking across now, I think about 2001, 2002, we got 182 people. Thank you for Teresa to be in it. but that increased so quickly, we could tell that was going to be a really good market. And for many years, Vitruvian continued, certainly after sort of I'd left, and it was still selling out at 1,000, within a few days.
Yeah.
So we knew that the middle distance market was going to be buoyant. It's different now. I mean, it's more buoyant now. But people come in straight into middle distance racing, whereas years ago, people would come in at a sprint distance type thing and then spend 3 or 4 years doing sprint distance before then moving up to a standard distance and a middle. Whereas obviously nowadays they're coming in doing one sprint distance and going straight to a middle distance.
Was the decision to put on the half outlaw, was that one that you thought there's obviously room here for another half distance race in the UK? And also it ties in nicely with preparing athletes for the full distance race as well, doesn't it? Is that something that happened in the very first year you did the outlaw?
No, I think it took us 4 or 5 years to get the half launch. Okay. And the reason why we did it was, as you say, people were doing the full, but they were going elsewhere to race the half. Well, it made complete sense that if we were able to put half distance on, then they'd race the half and they'd race the full. And that was, for the first couple of years, that was what it was all about. Obviously, nowadays, I'm not sure whether it is the fastest selling triathlon in the UK, but it's pretty close. And we're selling 2,000 slots in the space of 24 hours.
Yeah.
And, one year, we believe it sold, I think it was 1,600 places, and we sold it out within 60 seconds.
Wow.
And that was probably 5 years ago, something like that, 4 years ago. And, still nowadays, that event still sells so quickly.
Well, I think it's a testimony to the brand, but it's also a fact that if you're doing any kind of long distance event in the summertime, you need a half distance event to prepare sort of 5-6 weeks out. And there are very few of them around at that time of year. So it becomes this ideally placed, yeah, get in there and get that done at the end of May, because that'll give you really good preparation for the full distance race you're doing anywhere across the world, won't it?
Yeah, and that suited as well. Obviously, sort of European-wise, if you're going to go full distance, there's only Lanzarote that's before it.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of, so you've got your Austrias or your Nice that are really later on and that type of thing, but are actually sort of like predominantly July and August time. And so, yeah, to be able to find to do a half in May, sort of like it works pretty well.
Yeah. And then what was the story with Holcombe coming along then? That was obviously the second half distance outlaw that you added.
Yeah, we'd settled for a couple of years by having two. And then we sort of realised that we've got something that works well in Nottingham, and it was the outlaw, so it's all Nottingham based. Would it travel? And if it would travel, then what could we do afterwards? And so we, as it happened, Adam, who's the other race director, was literally, and this is one of those sort of stories that you hear, but it's genuinely true. He'd gone on holiday. He'd gone to Wells on holiday, took a young family there that he had, that he still has. And he phoned me and he just said, mate, I'm at this place. It's absolutely amazing. He was like, we've got to do a triathlon. And so he said, look at Holcombe Hall, this, that, and the other. So I looked and I was like, oh, mate, that's unbelievable. So then we started the process of actually looking around at not only Holcombe but some other places to do a series of half distances, with the flagship still being the full distance in July. And that's how we sort of started on Holcombe. But we, before we went along that route, we had to create literally a list of 20 things that we had to find from a venue. And so we took our theories of what we was doing in Nottingham and we just literally transferred them. But we'd learned a lot from year one in Outlaw and then sort of like to where we were, that what we wanted from a venue. And that's why we've been so picky as time's gone on to actually develop the series, really.
Well, I'm going to see if I can pick your brains here for the benefit of the listeners, because I heard you sneak in a little trail there that said you're looking to develop a series of half distance events. So is there more on the horizon potentially?
There's been not more on the horizon for a long time. The problem is,
spill the beans. Come on, people want to know.
And as Adam knows, we're all quite picky and we all want something from a venue. And whether that's obviously, you know, a swim that's right next to transition, that's got a good, you know, good, safe, decent, you know, attractive bike ride, along with a multi-lap run that spectators can get to, along with a campsite, along with easy to reach and all these sorts of things. It's not so easy to find them.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to spill any beans. But we're out there where, you know, I've put a lot of miles on the cars just recently, just trying to find some places where I think would work going forward.
That's interesting. All right, so it's a watch this space thing then. Okay.
it's a watch this space thing, yeah.
So one thing you mentioned earlier that I want to go back to, because I think this is a really interesting insight into human psychology. You created a brand and you've got the Outlaw logo. And you almost said in passing, we wanted something people could have tattooed on them. And it's amazing to me that when I came down and saw the race this summer, there are so many people who've got the Outlaw logo tattooed onto themselves. It's pretty amazing that you can create a brand that has that sort of, that draw to people that they'll actually, you know, it's been years and years, hasn't it, of having people have the M dot tattooed on them.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because when you put the sort of, people would nowadays call it a brand guideline, when you put your theories together of what you want from something, obviously I'd raced Ironman in loads of places and you know, sort of like had friends that had the tattoos. It was one of those things. It was like, do you reckon somebody get a tattoo? So, well, actually, if your logo is appropriate to it. And then, because we know when you go full distance, it's a, you know, whether it's a life changing for just 6 months or whether it's life changing for virtually forever, then it's one of, you know, you want to, some people will want to mark that occasion.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we thought we'd put a brand, you know, a logo together that people could then get tattooed. And I actually think that somebody got an outlaw tattoo after the first event, and it was like, oh my God, that's amazing. So yeah. I'd like to find out who's got a tattoo from the first event, because, you know, there's loads. I see, the nice thing is, and I don't do tattoos personally, but I've got sort of like lots of friends with outlaw tattoos. I remember being in Sheffield, and I was in a Costa in Sheffield for no reason. You know, I was just, it was nothing triathlon related. And I saw a chap in front of me with an outlaw tattoo on his calf. And I was like, I just wanted to just literally sort of like tap him on the shoulder. And yeah, I like that. But he would have obviously thought I was probably a little bit nuts, and actually didn't. But I've certainly been to, I remember being on holiday a few times, and I've seen various tattoos. And just thinking, oh my God, that's pretty amazing, actually.
Well, you mentioned there this idea that long distance racing is life changing for people, or it certainly can be. You know, I don't think there's anybody does the first one without having this sense of an epic achievement is about to happen. So, do you get a sense of that? I mean, you said before you're not into this shirt and tie job kind of thing, but you definitely created something that has changed thousands and thousands of people's lives for the better, right? That must feel pretty good waking up in the morning.
I don't think of it like that, actually. I never have thought of it like that. If it makes a positive change for anybody in their life, then that's really, really good. And I think I'm a positive person, and on that sort of basis, I like to sort of, spread that about. We are, all of our crew, all the people that work sort of for us, and the volunteers, everything that we like to spread about is positivity. And I think it doesn't, you know, there's the amount of people that have come from a volunteering point of view into racing, and the reason why they do it is because they've had such a good experience on the volunteering side of things, and they want to see it on the other side, and then have had an equally good experience on the racing side of things, is what I like. I've got some, yeah, really sort of huge, amazing stories which people just sort of tell me, and, you know, and I can go through thousands. I won't. But, you know, it's one of those things. It's nice to know that you've had a positive effect on somebody. I don't think that I've done that. They ultimately have done that. We've just given them the option to do it, really.
Yeah, it does have that. I mean, it did seem like all of your volunteers, there was a real sense of family about it rather than of a commercial organisation, which I don't know whether you can create that deliberately, but it just had a really good, happy, close-knit feel to the whole thing.
I guess that's probably because it is sort of family, and probably until this year, or maybe a little bit of last year, within reason, my mum and dad had been at every single event.
Wow!
You know, they were, and the kids nowadays as well. So we've got an 18-year-old and a 15-year-old, and both of those started coming to events within weeks of being born, and when we first started, none of my mates wanted to volunteer. I was 18 years old or something. I was a bit, you know, they were, if I said, do you want to come to the pub for a pint, they'd have said yes. So I said, do you want to get up at 6 o'clock on a Sunday morning and put a yellow bib on and help people around, you know, give out drinks and take times and that type of thing. It was all my mum and dad's friends that were helping us when we, you know, for the first 10, 15 years or so. And there's a few people that started out, you know, 20, nearly 30 years ago, they're still actually helping out nowadays. And so it does, and it has a, you know, sort of like we've got a WhatsApp group, and it's called OSB Family. And that's, you know, it feels like a family, because you look after each other.
Yeah.
So the crew and volunteers are, they're the ones that make it. They're not, you know, our, you know, there's six or seven of us here in the office. We, by the time it gets to race day, it's about the 400 people that are out there, you know, whether they're changing tyres, whether they're giving out drinks, whether they're stripping wetsuits off, slapping on suntan lotion and all that sort of thing. They're the people that make the race experience.
Nice. What's been one of your favourite stories to tell from all the Outlaws that you've done? I'm just going to leave that open for you.
Oh my God. Yeah, I can't tell that one. I tell you what, I can. This is sort of like it's more relevant than. It's relevant because it's happened in the last few days. Two of my best friends from when I was growing up at school, so sort of like I've known them 30-odd years type thing. We had a drink on Friday night. We went to the pub, and bearing in mind we don't see each other. We see each other once every 6 months or so. And they said to me, "Why do we get swimming lessons?" And I'm like, "Why do you two want swimming lessons?" And they says, "Well, we've actually entered Outlaw Half, Nottingham." I didn't have a clue. So nice. Bearing in mind, these guys were never going to be particularly athletic when we was at school. And I was the freak because I used to go running and swimming and all this sort of thing. So these two guys have gone from being quite unathletic to actually doing Outlaw Half and are going through that progress of going from breaststroke to front crawl, and they wanted a swim coach. Now, that's massive. To me, knowing, because I know everything about these guys, and for them to make that type of change is amazing. It's relevant because it's at the moment, but, you know, that's a good thing. That's a really nice thing. There's lots of things that have happened. People getting married on the finish line.
Really? Literally getting married on the finish line?
Yes. And they met at another event, didn't they? So they met at the relays because one of them had a crash and the other one went to help them.
Wow.
I'm hoping I'm getting the same couple, by the way. And then they got married at the Outlaw the following year. They both finished. I think she beat him as well. They both finished, and then they got married about 50 metres away from the finish line.
Yeah, we have a reverend.
Yeah, we had a somebody that was obviously not a vicar, I can't remember, somebody else that was allowed to marry them. We must have a proposal every year on the finish line. So that's always quite nice. There's always a few, Simon Ward who commentates, he always has a little tear about that one. lots of life-changing things, which is good. And as I say, it's not always about just the athletes, about sort of like the volunteers that are that give us a hand as well.
Yeah. And listen, just to sort of wrap this interview up towards the end, I love the way this has gone, and your enthusiasm for all of this really, really shines through. If there's people out there who are listening who have never done a half distance race or have never done a full distance race and are hesitant to enter something, what advice would you give to them?
Now, from if it was me, I'd actually enter it and then sort things out afterwards, which is not the way we organise our event, by the way. Me personally is sort of different, but I need a name to go and do an event. Strangely enough, I'm not going to massively say come and do one of ours for this, that, and the other reason. Choose what you want to do. Choose it for the right reasons, okay, and then put the plan in place to actually do it. The events, triathletes are nice people. You know, somebody said the other day, should I join a running club or a triathlon club? I'd always say join the triathlon club because ultimately I think I just find triathletes really, really friendly. You can be born a triathlete nowadays, but sort of like for those people that are sort of like the 40-somethings, I think they're a nice group. And there's always so many people who've got a different story, and they're always willing to help and offer advice and that type of thing. So I'd say enter your event, definitely join the club, or do it with a few mates. I think the social, every training session I do is with somebody else. I very rarely go out on my own and train. I was dragged out at just after 6 o'clock on Sunday morning to go for a run. Now, I wouldn't do that on my own. The nice thing was I was back at 9 o'clock, and at 9:30 I was eating bacon butties. However, you know, I think it's got to be social. It's got to be done for the right reasons, and you've got to think, but how are you going to sort of positively affect everybody else that's involved? So whether it's next of kin, partners, husbands, wives, kids, or just yourself. But it's, you know, it's sort of, you know, yeah, go ahead, do it, but do it from a social aspect, from certainly from a first year point of view.
Yeah. So just go ahead and click enter and get in there. I love that.
Yeah.
So,
oh yeah, I am being told actually. And the other option is to, and we do get this a lot, and people that are frightened of doing their first event, they come and volunteer to start with. And that is a good way of getting an athlete as well. Because from Teresa's point of view, who's only ever done one triathlon, but she's now done one. But next time it's not going to be sea swim, is it?
No.
But yeah, so obviously Teresa spent 20 years volunteering and seeing lots of things. She looks after the finish line, so she's more than most, actually. But it's a good way of getting people volunteer.
Yeah.
If you're at all concerned, because I think if you come in from a volunteering point of view, you understand, you see a lot more than what your average athlete sees in the day, because they obviously see what the blinkered aspect of things, and you learn a lot by watching the event.
Yeah, it's really nice, isn't it, to see the vast difference in shapes and sizes and abilities that people that you see when you're volunteering or you're spectating. That I think if you're involved in the event, you tend to think, oh, it's just fast people here, but you see the whole spectrum when you get to volunteer at an event.
Our club went to Barcelona last year, and even I was walking around transition, and I've seen a few transitions in my time. And I was looking around, and I was looking at everyone's bikes, and they all had a better bike within reason than me. They were certainly, in my world anyway, I thought they were all skinnier and fitter and this type of thing. And it can be, that transition area can be really, really sort of, just sort of scary. But I think that, and I do really feel this, that the nice thing about Outlaw is we do get every size, every shape. And I spend, certainly Outlaw full, I'm in transition within reason up until until the moment it starts, actually. And just walking around there, and you see a lot of very, very nervous people. But some people, when they're nervous, are also pretty funny.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of sort of like, you know, people do have a good time, and it's a good experience in there. You know, that's everyone starting the same thing, and everybody, 99% of people, they just want to finish. And so there's a lot of camaraderie and that type of thing, and the crew and everything, they all join in with that. So it's, I think I like that 20 minutes before, once we've put our bit to bed, I like the 20 minutes before the start of any race. That's good.
Nice. All right. Well, listen, thank you so much for taking the time to come on. Your events next year, we've got Half Outlaw Nottingham, end of May. We've got the Full Outlaw Nottingham, end of July. And then Holcombe Half, when's that?
Start of July. So Nottingham Half, which is sold out now, middle of May, just after the middle of May. But I think I think entries for that, I think the only way you can get in that is on the charity. Holcombe is still okay for entries. And within reason, I think we're down to like 50 or 60. And I should never say numbers. I'm always told not to say numbers. But we're certainly well below 100 now for Outlaw Full.
Right, so people need
to...
I have
people that tell me what to say about marketing.
They need to get in if they want to get in. And if they're sitting on the fence, the best way to go is just enter and work out the details afterwards.
Exactly.
Brilliant. Exactly. All right, thank you very much for your time. We'll speak to you again soon.
Will do. Thanks, Rob.
Cracking interview there, Hells. And I think he mentions at some point they are down to the last, below the last 50 entries for Outlaw for this year. So if people want to get in and are sitting on the fence and are sitting there thinking, do I do it? The one thing I'm going to say to people is, whether it's the Outlaw or not, if you're sitting on the fence and thinking, could I do an Ironman? Could I? I think I can, but I'm not sure. I'm scared to commit. Maybe I'll do it. Just get entered. Do it and work out the details. There's a magic happens when you're bold and you decide you're going to go and do something that just won't happen if you wait another few months. Get your race entries in this week and commit to it before Christmas comes around, because every day between now and race day, I'll feel magical.
Rob, what's got into you?
I'm on fire, aren't I? It's my little light up Santa sitting there smiling at me.
God. I mean, it's all very true. It is very, very true. Magic words. Just, yeah, go and do it.
Love it.
Go and do it. You and I are very similar in that vein, in that we're both sort of like, life is too short. Just go and crack on with it.
Yeah. If anyone's listening and you make a decision to enter something off the back of listening to us two idiots talk, send us a tweet or a Facebook message, because it's nice to have a little bit of, to spread a little bit of the brilliant madness around and get people inspired to do something, isn't it?
Always. Yeah. I might have entry news for you for something for next week. I might not.
Really? Oh, well, maybe. If you're going to enter something silly, I have to as well.
Oh my God, there might be two things.
Yeah, okay. Having thrown this out there, we have to follow our own things, don't we?
Yes.
Okay.
there may be one or two things.
I love it.
We'll watch this space on that one. But, Rob, interestingly, actually, I was talking to someone over the weekend. And
you give nothing away, dear.
Do I give nothing away?
I was talking to somebody.
Somebody. Don't want to
say who it was. Yeah.
Nah, I'm not going to say who it was. But they've always said, no, I don't ever want to do an Ironman. I'm just not interested.
Okay.
And I said to them, okay, what happens if you went into that race knowing that you, from the beginning, you were training for it, you were going to walk the marathon?
Yeah.
Suddenly, fear goes completely. They know they could do that.
Yeah.
And then I think that did make them think, oh, yeah, maybe I could.
If you're not doing something because you're scared, that's a really bad reason to not do something. Like, it's the worst reason to not do something.
Yeah, I think I'm a bad influence sometimes on people. I think I'm a great influence, but sometimes...
That's exactly what you are. You're a great influence.
I was like, but really? I mean, if you go into it knowing that genuinely you could walk that and you'd probably be able to walk it in... I mean, you'd literally have 9 or 10 hours to walk a marathon. You could do that.
Yeah.
There you go. Just putting it out there.
All right, let's jump into Coach's Couch this week, shall we?
Yes, let's do it. Right, so we've heard about the first three parts in the time training system. So we've done testing,
yep.
Intelligent intensity.
Yep.
Last week you talked about mindset. So the final part then, about the importance of effectiveness.
Effective effort, yeah. So we've gone through all these various other bits, and this is kind of going to tie it all together just before we wrap up our year for Christmas, and we'll go back to a kind of more traditional coach's couch after that. The first thing to mention about effective effort is to say this kind of ties together everything we've talked about at this point. You're only going to be the best you can be if you've literally spent every minute of training time you've had having the most positive impact on your progress that it can. And for people, if there's any aspect of the training where they're not sure what pace or power or intensity they should be going at in training, or they aren't clear what sport they should be focusing on, then, you know, you can basically guarantee that they're wasting their valuable time and effort. So we want to avoid people falling into this track of just logging junk miles for the sake of adding volume. And, you know, for most age groupers, training time comes at a premium, and it's simply not an acceptable position to end up getting to your allotted training time for that day and not really being sure what you should be doing, why you're doing it, or how hard you should be doing it. So the second thing to tie in here about effective effort is to say we need to talk about rest and recovery a bit and underline that with people, especially if they're going to be going longer distance stuff, because if we ask people to ask themselves honestly when the last time was that they took an actively planned rest day or an actively planned recovery day, most people sit there and go, I haven't really ever done that ever. And I think that the challenge is almost everybody thinks that rest and recovery are the lowest priority And if they get the chance, they, you know, they know they should probably do it, but they're really going to take the chance to train if they get it, because that scarcity mindset says life might change at any minute and I might not get to do the training I'm wanting to do. So I should grab the chance to do the training now. But I just wanted to underline to people, look, the improvements in your fitness are only going to happen when you recover effectively from the training. So if you kind of keep on driving yourself without a structured plan to rest and recover, you're basically not ever going to recover, and therefore those fitness gains are not going to happen. So the compulsory rest and recovery days are kind of a staple of what we're going to say we're going to do. So think of it like that. It's compulsory. You're going to make a rest and recovery day each week your first priority before you plan whatever kind of training you're going to do. Even if you just think, well, my biggest or hardest day is going to be Saturday, so Sunday has to be a rest and recovery day. Make that the cornerstone of your week so that you can give everything to training, knowing that you're going to recover every week. For most people, that one dedicated recovery day a week is enough to reset the system, no matter how unpredictable the week might be. Then they're going to be good to go again for the next week. So really make that effective use of your effort in terms of planning the rest, as well as, you know, I spent about 9 weeks talking about planning the training. And then this is the most important bit, plan the rest and recovery from that, so that week on week you get better and you get stronger. And that crazy goal of doing an Ironman or whatever you want to do is actually become a reality through the rest and recovery that you've planned. Nice. So that's pretty much it, Hells.
Yeah, nice. I had a good rest day. Oh, it was an all right rest day yesterday.
Your idea of a rest day. And tell everyone what you did yesterday on your rest day.
Oh, blimey. So I was trying to shift a few more, fueled by more cake books. So I went to another village primary school fair, actually, where I knew I would be set up on my little table within about 2 minutes. So I was... But then there was still over an hour, but I sort of thought, you know, right, fine, they've allowed me to come, I will offer to help out. So that meant then that I ended up putting up a gazebo, which was hilarious, and then helped them set up their Santa's grotto. So put up a Christmas tree for them, and was putting presents in a sack. It was just comedy.
That's great, then, isn't it? Because also, Hells, you know what? Right there, that's the difference between a rest from training day and a recovery day, isn't it? You take a day off training and you end up doing heavy lifting and fold yourself into a gazebo. Oh,
God. It was hilarious. And for my efforts, Rob, I sold a grand total of six.
Oh, that breaks my heart. I was trying to convince you to come down to the, you know, the local village where I live had their Dickensian Day thing where everyone has street stalls, and it absolutely belted it down. There was rivers of water running down the street and sparking the electrics everywhere. And I was like, I'm so glad poor Helen didn't come down here to try and sell these books. All right, listen, come on, listeners, if you're listening to this and you haven't bought a copy of Fueled by More Cake yet, get to the website, please, fueledbycake.com.
Correct.
You can make an online purchase. It makes a brilliant gift for you, which you can wrap yourself and give to your partner to give to you on Christmas morning. Everybody's always desperate for a gift idea for you. Your Auntie Cheryl's looking for something to buy to you. Just buy a copy of this and give it to her wrapped up and say she can give you that, because otherwise you're going to have a badly knitted hat. And you don't need that, do you? Nobody needs more badly knitted hats in their lives. So I want to hear, Hells, that we have had at least 10 purchases of Fueled by More Cake by this time next week. That's our target right there.
Yeah, that's a great target. That would be amazing. It is all for charity. And honestly, we are getting closer to that £15,000 target. We just need a tiny little bit more help.
How many more books have you got to go?
Well, I think I've got like two boxes left. So, you know, we are shifting some now. Good. It's Christmas again. So, yeah.
100 and something books left.
Yeah, 100 and something books left. Right. So
we're going to have 10 more of them gone by this time last week. Come on, listeners, get them shifted for us.
Thank you.
All right. Now then, quick little bit of news before we wrap up today's show. And the first one, all the listeners love this one, Hells. The Iron Man lottery. Do you remember that from a couple of years ago? We had
George Banks on,
didn't we? He won a ticket in the Iron Man lottery. So new to the sport listeners won't know this. The Iron Man used to do this lottery thing and you paid about $40. Your name went in the hat and they pulled out 50 names and you just got a slot for Kona. You still had to pay for it, And then something happened. They fell foul of American lottery laws and they had to stop doing that. Well, they found a way around it by the sounds of things. And there are 40 slots available in this thing called Kona Dreaming. So the good news is, if you've already entered an Ironman race, then you are already entered into the draw. And the best part about this is you can enter on a postcard like you used to be able to do on those Saturday morning TV shows. No purchase necessary. And that's hidden in the terms and conditions at the bottom. So check it out, people. If you would like to go to Kona and you don't think you're going to qualify, you can just mail in a postcard to them. You've not got long because it has to be post-dated by the, did we say the 23rd of December?
So there are another couple of options. So one of them is the 23rd. Well done. Yeah. And then the third draw date, the postcard must be postmarked by January the 20th. Okay. So again, if you want to, you know, give yourself another Christmas present.
There you go.
That is quite a Christmas present to give to yourself, isn't it? Jeez.
And I even read in the small print, you're allowed to enter three times, but no more. So you can send three postcards in with the details
Correct.
On. There we go.
Correct.
So you can find the links to this, everybody, by following the links around on the Ironman website.
Or Google Kona Dreaming.
Kona Dreaming with no G, which I don't approve of.
No.
I like correct pronunciation, grammar and spelling, Hills. So Kona
teacher,
Dreaming.
You. Always a teacher.
Yeah, yeah. You can win the opportunity to pay for a slot. We should point out it's still going to cost you the thick end of $1,000 to pay for the actual entry fee itself. But I know there's lots of people absolutely dream about racing at Kona, and maybe they don't have the genetics to get there, or they don't have the time to commit to all the training. So I think it's totally legit and valid that people really, really love this sport who are not the fastest people in the world and get to maybe go and race there as well. So yeah, awesome stuff. Check that out. And on the back of that, there's some good news for women in triathlon as well, isn't there?
Yeah, because 70.3 Staffordshire has been selected as one of 20 races around the world that will basically offer additional qualification places exclusively for women for the 70.3 World Championships, which are going to be in Nice next September. So yeah, so there'll be an extra 25 qualifying spots at 70.3 Staffordshire for that race in France in September of 2019. So if you think you want to give it a crack, then Staffordshire might be a good place to go and try and do it. It's a good race too. It's a really good race.
It's a cracking race, isn't it? And it says here that they're going to allocate these 25 extra slots in the same proportional representation age group way like they would do anyway. And the women always get a really raw deal in a lot of races because there's usually maybe only two slots in even the biggest age group, isn't there, when there's so few slots.
Yeah,
is
that's
it a 50
right.
slot race at it is, isn't it? 50 slot race at Staffordshire. So probably even the biggest female age group would only get two or maybe three slots. Here with 25 of them more to allocate, they're probably gonna get like another six or seven slots in each of the three biggest age groups alone.
Yeah, so usually the biggest ones are sort of 40 to 44 is usually the biggest one.
Yeah.
For the women, and then I'd say 45 to 49 is pretty big, and 35 to 39 as well.
So looking at the bigger picture, then there's 20 of these races who are going to get 25 slots. That's an extra, do the math, Rob, 500 slots for women for the World Championships. That's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
That's
really really good.
Really really good way of evening up the numbers, I think. I wonder if they'll end up doing a similar thing for Kona.
Maybe. But I do think since they put the 70.3 World Championships to 2 days, so like the men have a day, the women have a day, I do think it's a really good thing because it enables both the men and the women to, you know, have their sort of moment in the limelight and have their race and have a fair race as well.
Yeah. Yeah, especially in the lesser numbered age groups, it's really hard that you can repeatedly finish second at a 70.3 and never get a slot to the Worlds. Whereas in the bigger age, mind you, even on the ladies' side, even in the bigger age groups, there's not much happens after finishing first, second or third, is there? So, yeah, I think this is a real positive step by them. Hats off.
Love it.
Or,
love it.
In the words of Patagon Man, double hats on to you.
Double hats on. Double.
Right, well, that pretty much brings us round to the end of the show. One thing I forgot to mention was if you're interested in learning more about the time training system that we've talked about, you can watch our free webinar. There's a link in the show notes. Team Oxygen Addict is closed at the moment for new entries, but we're going to be opening up in January. So I know a few people have emailed over the last couple of weeks to ask when that's going to happen. So we're going to have a January opening window there. So go and check out that webinar. There's a link in the webinar to get a free 4-week training plan as a thank you for watching the webinar. So that'll see you through to January if you're really keen to get going before that happens. And the last thing for me is I've got a one-to-one coaching spot opening up at the start of January. So if there's anyone interested in one-to-one coaching, you can drop me a line through the contact sheet on oxygenaddict.com. That's pretty much the end of the show there then, Hels, isn't it?
I think it is, Rob. I'm going to go and eat my dinner.
Very nice. What are you having?
Maybe have a cheeky glass of red wine with it.
Oh, very nice. Enjoy.
Yeah. Thanks, I will.
All right, well, listen, everybody. Thanks very much for listening. I'm Coach Rob Wilby.
I'm Helen Murray.
And you've been listening to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. Until next week, have a great, safe training racing week. Try and get out for at least one run in the dark this week and see the new Santas that have been put up around your housing estate. And if you're on the fence about entering an inspirational event for next year, just press enter. We will see you all again next week. Thanks, everyone. See ya.